You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast by the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blogging community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Today's episode of the show is going to be on a Game 2 loss to the Portland Trail Blazers. A blown opportunity for the Denver Nuggets to really take control of this series and to set their odds of winning and advancing to the Western Conference Finals. Let that opportunity slip through their fingertips. And you got to tip your hat to Portland. They made some interesting adjustments, which we're going to talk about in the show. And, they put themselves into position to win despite a not very good game from Damian Lillard. If you would have told me coming in that Lillard would play the way that he did tonight, so go 5 of 17 from the field, just 14 points and 4 assists, I would have said, oh, Denver probably wins by 15, 20 points. So the fact that they lost, and not just lost, but much like in game one, this was a 7-point loss. But it felt like a lot more, and there was only a few moments in this game where I thought Denver really had a chance. Down the stretch, Denver kind of rallied, but for the most part, this was a pretty lopsided game. So today's episode of the show, going to go through all of the notes. If you're new to the show, the way I like to go through games, I don't like to just kind of recap what happened. Instead, I take notes on interesting things on first watch and on rewatch. I always give every game two looks over. On second watch, you always get a lot more. You kind of get a real feel for what kind of things a team is trying to do with their different coverages, their different offensive sets, and so forth. And so we're going to get into all of that. So let's jump right in. First note is on the crowd. This was an embarrassing crowd in multiple levels. There was a lot of seats available the day of, much more so than there were in previous games. There was just a lot of empty seats, and I don't know what the deal is, Denver. I know that there's a lot of going on with the Avs and the Nuggets in town. We had a whole series before, but coming into this game and just having kind of that quiet, dead crowd, and tip your hat to Portland. They did a good job of taking the crowd out of it with an early run and some early energy. But one of the storylines in this game is that the Denver Nuggets, and Jokic in particular, I think Murray as well, just didn't have a lot of energy. And, it's never like an excuse. You never put anything on a crowd and say, oh, the crowd lost this one. But, you talk about it a lot. The home team gets a boost. They get that extra little motivation from their home crowd. And I think walking out of the tunnel, doing the announcements and everything, and seeing a pretty, a surprisingly empty and quiet arena, I think that probably took a little bit of the edge off. So a little bit of a bummer. And then also the in-game entertainment, they've done something for every single game, whether it was the light show or the t-shirts or towels or something. This game didn't seem really to have anything special. So you kind of felt going into it, this sense of like, man, this kind of feels like a regular season game. There's just nothing special feeling about this one. It doesn't feel like game two of a playoff series. So you kind of sense that right away. We were talking about it as media members on Press Row, just kind of like, man, this doesn't feel like there's a lot of energy in the building right now. One big switch that Portland made, they put Mo Harkless on Jamal Murray, and I love this adjustment. I think it's a smart, smart adjustment. It puts length on Murray. And Murray, one of the things that you wanted to accomplish, first of all, I think Denver has accomplished everything they really wanted to, whether they lose in this round or the next one. Making it to the Western Conference Finals would be great. I think this train, everybody gets off the train at the next stop no matter what, whether it's Portland or Denver. You'd love for them to kind of learn some more important, I think, for the Nuggets than getting out of this round is kind of learning the lessons that they need to. And obviously winning this round, because I think they're the better team. Winning this round, I think, would be a nice feather in their cap. But one of the things that I like about the playoffs already is they've really sort of brought to light some of Denver's weaknesses. And one of the major weaknesses that I think the Nuggets are going to have really for quite a while is just how disruptive length can be for the Denver Nuggets, both on both ends of the court. But I'm thinking with regards to this adjustment, I'm thinking primarily about on the offensive end, when Jamal Murray has the ball in his hands, trying to run that pick and roll. That Murray-Jokic pick and roll was just absolutely dominant in game one. It looked like, I talked about how it looked like Stockton and Malone out there at times. In tonight's game, you put Harkless on there. Murray had a really hard time delivering the ball in the pocket. And you just put that extra size out there. You get hands in the passing lane. I think Portland played with a lot more sense of urgency, a sense of desperation. And it showed. showed. You know, their defense was smothering, and Murray really struggled with kind of getting out of it. So that was the first adjustment. You expected it. Jason Quick of The Athletic wrote a column about this, which is why people should subscribe to The Athletic. Really good stuff, really good reporters in every market. But they so you knew this. I talked about this on yesterday's show. This was one switch up I kind of anticipated them making. Murray did hit a three on the second possession of the game, which is funny because Denver goes 6 of 28 in this game. The other story of the game is Denver's horrible shooting. 6 of 28, and they hit one on the second possession of the game. So over the final 47 minutes and change, Denver went just 5 of 28 from the three-point line. It's wild to think about. As I was rewatching the game, you know, you kind of forget some of the early shots that happened. Nuggets hit a three right away, and then they go cold. Jokic needs to recognize when he can go faster. There's this game more than it really reminded me of game one of the Spurs series. And it's fortunate that Denver was able to get game one of this series and kind of have that one game lead so that when you have an off night like they did tonight, you can sort of manage it. But this reminded me a lot of game one in that just like how the Spurs hard doubled Jokic, the Blazers hard doubled Jokic. But what's interesting is Jokic has seen every type of coverage. I thought he spent the first quarter really taking way too much time trying to make his reads and just going slowly. And had guys knocked down his shots, he probably would have had 7 assists in the first quarter alone. But nonetheless, there's still opportunities. And one of the plays I'm talking about in particular, I've talked about this play a couple times now in the playoffs, that little wedge roll action where they get a cross screen for Jokic when he's at the elbow and then he kind of dives, screen comes over, usually it's Gary Harris, then he takes the screen and goes across court and gets to the opposite block. Well, they run that play should be for Jokic, and I hope they point this out in the film. More often than not, especially when Cantor is guarding him, that play is but most dangerous when you go right on the catch because Cantor's trying to fight over a screen without fouling and get all the way across the court. Jokic usually has a step or two to go, but tonight he gets that. He stops. He holds the ball. He waits. He lets the defense get set. And, you know, Jokic is a player that I think really enjoys reading the court and anticipating where the help's going to come from and making him pay. I think his happiest and probably his most comfortable move in all of basketball is the post-up kick-out, draw the double team and kick-out. Well, when you anticipate the double team, when a team is double teaming you, that play is going to happen, but that doesn't mean that you need to slow the game down and let it become this really slow thing. I think the more you can go quickly, force the defense to rotate quickly and out of rhythm and don't let that backside rotation, not the help side come, but the helper guys, the guys on the weak side that all have to rotate over one, don't let them get set and prepared because the more you allow them to kind of take a breather, take in what's going on, the more they're rated to rotate on the backside. Tonight, Jokic, I thought, very, very slow, especially in that first quarter, very, very slow in his decision making, and it disrupted him quite a bit. And then, of course, the Nuggets go ice cold. I mean, they just start missing shots that wide open. Gary Harris, 0 for 3, all in that left corner, wide open. I mean, we're talking about wide open rhythm, inside, outside, three-point shots. Malik Beasley had one as well. I think some of why Denver maybe didn't have energy in this game, I think it's just a trait of theirs to not play when they don't have an urgency, when they're not behind in a series, or when a game's not must win, you get like 80% of their effort. That's been true of the Nuggets for years in the Jokic era. I think the team takes on his personality, and he's such a cerebral player. I think sometimes he can't trick himself into kind of getting up for games. You always hear those stories about MJ and like, oh, he would make up a beef and just to get himself going, just to get something. Well, Jokic needs a little bit of that, I think. Somebody needs to like say something bad about him going into each game so that he just kind of gets his juices flowing. But tonight he didn't have that, and when the cold shooting started to pick up, it kind of compounded all of that. I think if Denver would have made some of those early shots, maybe the energy, the building would have gotten going, maybe the energy would have been there. But when they started missing, Denver's sort of lackadaisical approach to this game really started to shine out. Listeners, I'm going to tell you about ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place, of course, is ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience, invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidate so that you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employees who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the very first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. The smartest way to hire. Another storyline in this one was just how Enos Kanter was able to get free 9 points in that first quarter. You know, the way you survive a Dame bad game if you're Portland is you get contributions from other guys, and tonight in the game they were able to get that. And Kanter's the one guy, you know, if he's, I think he can score some points, and Denver's not necessarily going to be killed for it. But you can't let those points come too much in bunches. And in that first quarter, there was just a lot of, you know, that pick and roll. Denver's really struggling with containing him on the roll, not so much just the post up, but on those rolls. And, you know, Denver got behind early in large part because of that. Second unit got smoked out of the gate in the second. Torrey Craig goes down. This is another storyline that'll take go into next game. Unfortunate, just kind of a... First of all, Torrey Craig, I nickname him Crash because he's always at the center of so many of these sort of unlucky physical plays. He's always getting punched and kicked and hit and pushed over and stuff. It has to be something with him because it happens so much. But this is an unfortunate one. I think it was Monte Morris. He kind of connects on the back of his foot or something like that, right in his nose, breaks his nose, blood everywhere. That is going to be a storyline for Denver. They already lack depth at the wing. They don't really have a true small forward on the roster. He's the closest thing. And if he's out, that means more minutes for Malik Beasley and Will Barton, both of whom are pretty wildly inconsistent, although I'd say Beasley, you know, offensively been pretty consistent for the Nuggets, defensively a mixed bag. Barton, unfortunately, mixed bag on both ends of the court at best right at the moment. So Torrey Craig going out, that could be a real loss for the Nuggets. We'll have to kind of see how he's able to go. He did come back in later in the game. I'll talk about that here in a moment. Jamal Murray, another one of the storylines here. So I talked about Murray and how he struggles with length. He also struggles at guarding. And in the playoff, in a regular season, teams don't alter their game plan. They don't just say, okay, here's the weak link. We're going to try to put this guy in certain positions. They just don't have time for all of that stuff. In a playoffs, teams do. And I think both the Spurs clearly realized this in their matchup with Denver. But the word is out now. I mean, teams target him and go right at him. And, you know, he cannot guard Damian Lillard. I mean, not too many players can, but he really can't. He can't guard CJ McCollum. He can't guard Rodney Hood, and he can't guard Mo Harkless. All of those guys went right around him. And you start to think, like, if you can't contain Mo Harkless on straight line drives, one-on-one, when he's set and you're set, you know, then that's a real problem. Denver's defense can only be so good. And tonight the defense was not bad. But you talk about the weak link, teams were just attacking him. And some of that could have had to do with the injury. But even before I really noticed the injury hampering him, they were just going right at him, and Harkless get right to the rim. Harkless dunked it on a one-on-one with Jamal Murray in front of him. He makes a move and gets beat so bad that he's able to, like, two-handed jam it. This offseason, Jamal Murray, I think, has probably seen enough. I mean, he's been so good. I just wrote a thing on DenverStiffs.com, kind of highlight some of the numbers behind him. He's been so good over the last five games, but this was probably, I think, by far the worst of the last six games now. So no sooner do I write that does he fall off just a little bit. The lead got up to 13, and this is why I say the game was kind of a 13-point game all game. Denver would cut it to 9. Portland would push it back up to 15, but it kind of always hovered around that zone. Jokic threw a perfect pass in that second quarter to Millsap that fumbled it, and it felt like that was the first moment where I kind of said, man, it's going to be one of those nights, isn't it? They're not making outside shots. Wide open passes are not being converted. Wide open shots, tip-ins weren't being converted, and you just kind of felt it. I mean, that's what I talk about the Nuggets' focus when they're not against the wall. Once shots stop going, it just seems like everything starts to unravel for them. I thought Jokic brought his head in this game, but not his heart. That's a note I had in my notebook here. Is He was trying to figure them out, and I think he was a lot of times making the right pass and getting guys. But especially on a night when guys are just not making shots, you have to have that emotional burst that just gives you a little bit, you know, you jump a little higher, run a little faster, a little bit mentally tougher, you play through, you give multiple efforts. I don't think he had that tonight. Did he make a ton of egregious plays? No. In that third quarter, he did. But in the first half, not really. But he just didn't have any oomph to what he's doing. That's why he was scoreless in the first quarter. I think it was only the second quarter of the playoffs that he's been scoreless. Beasley, I have a note in here, he just skies for some of those rebounds. He's a guy that always sort of plays with energy and effort. He just, that's part of his game. He's the opposite. He's not always the most cerebral player, but you always know him and Torrey Craig, you always know you're going to get A-plus effort. And some of those rebounds he gets, man, I wonder how high he jumps on some. It's got to be 45 inches in the air. His vertical already, I don't know what it is, probably 40 inches or something like that. But you get a running start at a rebound, my God, does that guy get up. It's like he's shot out of a cannon. Beasley was just 3 for 8 on free throws in this game. He missed, I believe, back-to-back free throws, or like, you know, went to the line for 2 free throws and missed both 2 different times, which is crazy. He's an 85% free throw shooter. This is what I'm talking about. Denver, it's just not their night. 6 of 28 from the 3-point line, 61% from the free throw line. Just not making anything. And then all those shots in the paint, all those tip-ins, just didn't convert any of them. Murray had 2 different possessions in the second quarter, with 2 shot chances at a jump shot. So he shoots a jumper, gets the offensive rebound, kicks it back out to him for 3, and he shoots and misses that one. And those are the shots. Shooters, when they miss one, don't have to move and then get a second chance. They almost always make it. He had basically 4 shots on 2 different possessions 2 times in a row and couldn't get anything out of it. So 12-point quarter, absolutely atrocious. Denver down 15, and there was even boos in the crowd. I think the crowd was booing because they didn't want Denver to take as many threes as they were. I get it. There were opportunities for Denver to drive, but at the same time, Gary Harris, wide open 3-pointer catch and shoot. Jamal Murray, back-to-back wide open 3-pointers in the corner. I mean, some of these shots are, you don't ever want to just say, I think guys like Jokic, Paul Millsap, those are guys you can say, no, go get on the block, try to get to the free throw line, or just try to get to the rim through hell or high water. Jamal Murray, I don't know that I want to say that. For Gary Harris, I want him to kind of play within himself, and if you have wide open shots, I don't want those guys thinking, oh, I'm not making them, I can't shoot. Shoot or shoot. Gary Harris, Jamal Murray, Malik Beasley, when those guys are open, they need to take 100% of their open shots. It's just, unfortunately, in this game, they just couldn't find the bottom of the net. Harkless went out though. He rolled his ankle. So Torrey Craig's out. Mo Harkless is out, and you know, this could change a series. Both of those guys very important for their versatility. Not either team's best player, but one of their more versatile players. And of course, Harkless, one of the stories you could say, Denver down 15. The second half they rallied back. Maybe it was in at least part because Jake Layman just not as good as Mo Harkless at guarding Jamal Murray. So it's kind of something to look out for, how healthy and how close to 100% Mo Harkless can be from rolling his ankle in this game. I suspect game 3 he'll probably play but be a little bit tender. Game 4 maybe a little bit tender as well. By game 5 maybe all the way back, or maybe he misses a game. You never know with ankle injuries. They had a little bit of life in the third, but just couldn't sustain it. And this reminded me so much of game 1 against the Spurs. There was multiple runs to cut it to like 7 points, but every time they did that, then Portland would go on a run to push it right back up to 13, 14, 15. They kept getting beat to the punch. So when you talk about just not their night, in addition to missing free throws, in addition to missing tip-ins, and in addition to missing wide open catch and shoot 3-pointers, they got beat to, it felt like, every single 50-50 ball. And there was a lot of them in this game. There was a lot of rebounds that could have gone to somebody, loose balls, just plays where it's like, okay, who wants it more? And Denver tonight, just Denver, I didn't think really wanted it more, wanted it as much. They didn't seem like the hungrier team. Murray was not delivering the pass on target on the roll, even in the second quarter. When he was able to get the pass through, not deflected, it was still always kind of like out of reach. It wasn't where in a position where Jokic could kind of keep his momentum going towards the basket or anything. He's got to get better at those deliveries. And then Jokic was just so out of sorts. I don't know what it was about this game. He didn't even seem to know. If you watch his postgame, which we have on our YouTube channel, our Denver Stiffs YouTube channel, you watch his postgame interview, even he said, I don't know, we just didn't have energy today. And Jokic's so funny. He's so much about feel, you know, trying to get inside of his head is a fool's errand. I really do think he's a guy that just kind of feels the game, doesn't necessarily think it a whole lot. He just has great instincts, and he's a smart guy. He certainly understands the game, But when you ask him like to analyze like what was going on, why couldn't you get the energy? Like he really has no idea. But he would admit that tonight the team played very lackadaisical, just no idea why that was the case. But in that third quarter, he had probably his worst quarter, I would say, of the entire playoffs. Missed some easy reads, got the ball stripped from him when he just wasn't reading the defense very well, missed some shots, missed a bunch of bunnies, missed a couple shots really bad. He had one turnaround jumper that almost it went over the rim and hit the backboard hard. It just looked like he was off balance. Everything he was doing was a little bit off rhythm. But they did claw back twice in the quarter, got cut the thing down. The worst play of the game, and this was a kind of a real killer and kind of exemplified what this whole game was about. Amino gets a fast break, and Denver has two guys back, I think Plumlee and Monte Morris. And inexplicably, both guys go separate. Like, Monte goes out to the left wing, Plumlee out to the right wing. Amino just runs right down the center of the court and gets a layup. And you're thinking, my God, man, what is going on with the communication on this team and just sort of where their head's at? Craig came back in, so Nuggets looking for a boost. I think Torrey Craig coming back in, wearing a mask with giant, I think, tampons shoved into his nose to stop to block the bleeding in his nose. And it was a bit of a Willis Reed moment. I mean, Denver was looking for somebody to play with energy. And outside of Malik Beasley, Torrey Craig was that guy. So the crowd even sensed, the crowd even watching this zombie-like Denver Nuggets performance, sees Craig come back in here, and there was a big, the crowd kind of woke up from that. Then he hits a three almost immediately. It was great. It really was a Willis Reed-type moment. Even that, the emotional lift of that couldn't make up for some of these ridiculous mistakes. I'll probably find the clip later on and post this on Twitter. So if you want to follow me at Adam_Matas on Twitter, the play that sort of was the defining play of this game, a sideline out of bounds right in front of Portland's bench. Portland has the ball, and Murray and Monte Morris somehow get mixed up on the most basic of screens where, I think they were both supposed to switch, lack of communication or something, and they leave Rodney Hood wide open, and he gets a little layup right by the rim. You think about tonight's game and what a grind it was, how much both teams struggled to score the ball efficiently. Neither team got to 100 points. Both teams had an offensive rating, I think, of 102 or below. So teams aren't scoring, and when you just mix up a basic coverage and give a team a wide open layup or a 4-foot jumper as this one was, those are free points in a game that where points are just so valuable. To me, that was the perfect defining play of where Denver's focus and effort and execution level was. To start the fourth quarter, the Blazers went with CJ McCollum instead of Damian Lillard, which I thought was an interesting little switch up. In last game, maybe it was because CJ had it going a lot more than Damian Lillard did, but last game they started Lillard in the fourth and Denver's bench. I actually asked Malone about this pregame because to me those minutes are so important. Denver's bench in that first series against the Spurs, Denver's bench to open the fourth quarter had some really bad runs that in one instance cost the Nuggets the game, in other instances changed up the momentum of the game. So, to me, those are really important minutes, and they went with CJ instead of Lillard. And wouldn't you know it, CJ McCollum and Seth Curry hit back-to-back three-pointers to open up this quarter. It's this moment right here, those moments, the first 2 or 3 minutes of the fourth quarter to me are, they will decide at least one game, if not multiple games. I mean, you could even argue that they decided this one with as close as Denver was able to make it down the stretch. If you take away those 6 points in two possessions, maybe you have a chance. So those minutes, I think, are going to be really, really important. And I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Malone and his staff altered the rotation to have Gary Harris out there to start the fourth. I would. Personally, I would. I'd probably have Torrey Craig and Gary Harris both out there. And maybe you bring Harris to a rest and then put him back out there to close. Maybe you kind of bookend him to start and finish the fourth but sit in the middle. But you just can't allow the Blazers to get going in those minutes because that sets the tone for the rest of the quarter. Jokic comes back in at 9:15. First couple possessions were still terrible. He still played almost exactly like that fourth quarter. Missed reads, passive. I just, wasn't quite feeling it. And then he picked up his fifth foul. He could have fouled out in this game. There was a couple, close calls, we'll say, where he probably could have gotten blown for his sixth foul. But, you know, it almost felt like he wouldn't have minded that. It just did not seem like his head was very into this game all the way up until this point. However, after his fifth foul, he did finally wake up and play, you know, his best 4 or 5 minutes of basketball, for whatever it's worth. He did kind of play his best there to close out. He gets a dunk. I don't know how many dunks he has, but he has to have like almost as many in the postseason as he does in the regular season. I bet he had 5 or 6 right now, if I were to guess, in the playoffs already. I think he only had like 9 or 10 in the regular season. So playoff Jokic is Air Jokic. Murray could barely walk, so he... You know, he's still reeling from those Jakob Poeltl illegal screens that Poeltl hit him with, I think, a couple different ones in that kind of hope high-profile, deep bone bruise or whatever it was. He gets hit in the first or second quarter. I can't remember which one. And it seemed to have re-aggravated it. And he was really struggling from that point on. I really noticed it in the fourth. I thought in the second and third, you know, you could tell that something wasn't quite right. He didn't have a lot of burst to him. But in the fourth quarter, it looked like he could barely walk. In hindsight, it might have been better for him not to be out there. That's how bad it was. Unfortunately, and if anybody that's had one of these deep bone bruises before like this, I don't think you need necessarily like rest makes it feel better, but unfortunately, every time you get hit again, it just re-aggravates it. So he's a guy that probably going to have to play through a little bit of pain from now until the Nuggets play their final game of the season. I don't think it's one of those things that's going to heal. Not a long-term risk or anything like that, but just going to be something that bothers him. He did hit a three, though, almost immediately from checking in. So he looks like he can barely walk up and down the court, and then he hits a three. Kind of got a really nice bounce, a shooter's roll, if you will. Jokic couldn't hit anything, and it was so wild. So even after he started playing a little bit better, making some passes, grabbing some rebounds, he had just classic Jokic shots, you know, right? The shots he loves, tip-ins, little jump hooks from 3 foot, those little floaters, and he just couldn't get anything to go. It was such a weird feeling. Again, mentally, he just didn't seem into this game, and maybe that's part of what it was. He was missing him just because he wasn't feeling it. He wasn't feeling himself this game. Denver out-rebounded Portland in that fourth quarter, 24-5. So they, if nothing else, I thought the fourth quarter Denver started hitting the offensive glass and just trying to, like, you could tell it wasn't going to be a pretty game, but you thought, okay, maybe they can just muck this up a little bit and go. But unfortunately, of those, they had 14 offensive rebounds, so they out-rebounded on the offensive end, they out-rebounded Portland 14-1, but they only outscored them on second chance points in the quarter 10-4, because on the one offensive rebound that Portland got, they hit a three-pointer. They had one team rebound as well towards the end of the game that Damian Lillard got fouled on and then hit one free throw. So Denver, for all of the rebounding, 24 rebounds, 14 second chance opportunities, they only got 10 points. That just kind of summarizes what kind of game it was for the Nuggets. 91-84, so a couple plays down here down the stretch that I think could have maybe shifted it. Denver fought. I never felt like they were going to win, but there were a couple moments where you thought, okay, if they can hit a shot here, if they can convert on this one, they'll at least put some pressure. They'll cut it to you 4 or 3, and they'll at least put some pressure on Portland to not collapse. 2 minutes and 35 seconds left, 91-84, and Malik Beasley goes to the line, and I foreshadowed this earlier. He missed both again. For the second time in the game, he missed both free throws. So 91-84, not that close. 91-86, again, you make a five-point game with 2.5 minutes to go. I think Portland starts to, you know, that puts pressure on them. It forces them to make a shot and to settle things down, but miss two free throws from one of your best shooters, just tough luck. 94-88, so a couple minutes later, Denver again down 6, and Denver can't secure the rebound. This is the one I was talking about, that team rebound. Denver's getting stops. They did a good job of getting stops in that fourth quarter, and they did a good job of rebounding, but on the one possession where you think, okay, there's a minute and a half left, just get a rebound and you can give yourself a puncher's chance. Ball goes out of bounds. Gary can't save it, and the rest was history. So not Denver's night. And now we have ourselves a series. Coming into the series, I said Nuggets in 7. I think Denver, even with tonight's performance, you could point to and say, okay, Damian Lillard didn't play well. But, you know, Jokic didn't play well. Jamal Murray didn't play well. So I think Gary Harris, 4 of 12, 0 for 5 from the three-point line. So, and Denver shooting just across the board, free throws, everything, so bad. So I don't know that you could point to any one thing and say, okay, this is the thing that's going to change going forward. Instead, the way I would put it is, I think both teams in game one brought a B-plus game. I thought both teams tonight brought a B-minus game. So it's not that, you know, one team is, you know, we've seen that, okay, one team is this much better than the other through two games. But I do think you're kind of waiting for which team can sort of look their best and get into their rhythm first and really break away. Tonight, Portland did enough to get a road win, an impressive road win, especially in Denver, where Denver's had that great home court advantage all year. Now the onus is on Denver to go to Portland and split one of these next two, game three or four. Portland, a great crowd, one of the best fan bases and crowds in all of the NBA. It's going to be a loud and rowdy atmosphere. But at the same time, Denver's played there twice, got one win already. Even when they had Nurkic in a fully healthy roster, they had one. They almost won without Gary Harris, Jokic, Jamal Murray, Jokic, and Paul Millsap. So, you know, it's a place Denver at least has experience winning. I will say, the adjustment of putting Mo Harkless on Jamal Murray, I think, is going to define the next couple of games, and then also just the way they doubled. If they continue to double the Nuggets, you know, I don't think Denver's always going to shoot like this. In fact, with the quality of shots Denver got, I think they're going to have 35, 40-point quarters, especially first quarters when the team is rested and getting the type of set shots that they have. But that being said, trying to do that on the road, the odds of Denver just going cold again, I think, go up just a little bit. So Denver now, you know, maybe a wake-up call. Maybe it's kind of a reminder that, hey, this is the playoffs. Every game you take off lowers your odds of advancing that much more. But I don't think that there's enough knowledge yet about how this series has gone through two games to really predict how it's going to go over the next several. So should be interesting. Should be a lot to talk about. No episode tomorrow. A travel day as I'll be headed to Portland. But we will have one the following day recapping that game. And then we'll make sure to bring you one over the weekend as well just to make up for lost time. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back again with brand new episodes.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.